Does everybody have a pen or a pencil? Okay, people are able to get access to a pen or a pencil. Good. I need you to get a pen or a pencil, and I need you to sit beside somebody. No. You don't need them right away. You will use their proximity in a second. But we're going to do something out of the gate here. I want you to open up your book here. Under session two, we're going to do this. We were going to do this at the end of the last session, but we'll start with it here. So kind of page, I don't know, three or four or whatever. There's a big circle. Go to the page with the big circle on it. We're going to do something a little different. We're actually going to change it a little bit from what the little write-up says there, but we're going to do this neighbor mapping exercise, and this is actually a pretty fun thing to be doing because we're going to put a little twist on something. Look at that circle, and right in the middle of that circle, I want you to put a dot. Right in the middle of that circle. That dot is going to represent your front door of your childhood home. Now, you might have lived in different childhood homes, but whatever childhood home first pops into your mind, that dot represents the front door of your childhood home. And the circle represents 90 paces in each direction. I want you, over there, we're going to take about 10 or 15 minutes. I want you to draw your neighborhood through the eyes that you had it as a child. We've done this with a number of different groups, and it actually turns into something pretty fun, so I'm kind of looking forward to this. But what I want you to do is draw your neighborhood. Draw your home. So you view it as like a map from the top down. But some people have done it as a sideways angle. People draw in different ways. But however you want to draw your neighborhood 90 paces out, whatever you can conceive 90 paces to be. Draw streets. Maybe there's a tree. And I want you to slowly fill in the details. Think back through the stories of your childhood there. Where did you meet that bully? Where did you break your arm? Where did you kiss that girl? You know, whatever happened in that neighborhood, put some little markers in. You can make this as creative as you feel. And I want you to also do this prayerfully. And we're going to kind of ask in our hearts and say, God, where were you with me in my neighborhood? Where did you watch me play? Where were you attentive to my little life as I ran amok in my little place? So I'm going to give you some more instructions, but I want you to just draw for about 10 or 15 minutes and fill out the details as much as you can remember them. Your friend's house, the playground, whatever was in your neighborhood, 90 paces out. Yes. Perfect. If you grew up on the farm, I would like you to draw whatever 90 paces out, or draw your farmyard or whatever that space looks like. Some people who have done farms have maybe made that 90 paces a little bit bigger to include some neighbors and so on. So the goal of it is less of 90 paces and more to kind of see your childhood world through your lens. And then we're going to do something fun with it after. So draw away, you artistes. Baptists are known for being good artists, I have heard, so I'm going to play a little bit of music as you do that, so just enjoy. How's it going? Good? Bringing back some childhood memories? Yeah, it does, doesn't it? One of my favorite feelings is nostalgia. I don't know, it's just, when Jesus came up with all the feelings, nostalgia was the one that I think he was like, oh, I'm going to give extra to Preston. I drove by my childhood home and I could see all the good stories and all the hard stories. I'm going to ask you to do something when you feel like you've filled out your circle a little bit, marked a few special spots, felt like maybe you can see where Jesus was in your story even before maybe you knew he was in your story. Where he found you and loved you and reminded you of his goodness. I want you to actually do something interesting. I want you to introduce your neighborhood to your neighbor. I want you to turn to them, and I want you to, kind of like introducing an old friend, say, here is my neighborhood. Here's where I did this. Here's where I saw that. Here's where I think God actually was. I want you to just do a full-on introduction. Tell your neighbor all about this wonderful place that you called home. And you might need to fill it out as you go. And many people who do this end up discovering things later and going, oh yeah, there was that other thing and that other thing. So turn to your neighbor, and we're just going to take a few more minutes here, even if you aren't quite done drawing it or if your scale's all wanky, that's all good. Turn to your neighbor and introduce to them and let them see the joy of your neighborhood from when you were young. Friends, give yourself another minute here, wrap up your conversation. Wow. How was that? How was that experience? Have you ever introduced somebody to your neighborhood before, your childhood place? Have you ever told those stories, or has it felt like a long time since you remembered some of those things? Was it, some of you might have moved around. What was it like to even think of your neighborhood? Did you have to chew over, go, oh, is it this neighborhood or that neighborhood? Was it difficult? Does anybody have a story about that? Yes. Uh-huh.
But then we moved when I was 11, so my childhood kind of got split in half. So it was technically one.
Yeah. Good. Okay. And you found one, and you were able to write some good stuff down. That's great. Any memory that jumped out that surprised you? Any place where you were like, oh, I forgot about that? Yeah.
Just the nurturing of the older adults that you didn't think about at the time, but now that's why I'm so emotional, that it takes the whole community to raise a child.
There were people that loved you before you knew you were being loved. There's a story in our family where on Posnikoff Crescent in Saskatoon, I was in grade one and I had to walk a mile to school both ways. It was just one of those kind of things. No, a mile uphill school both ways. Yeah, that's it. See, I can't even land an old classic joke. Anyway, well, whatever. And the school got let out early one day and it was minus 30. And I came home and my mom was gone. She didn't get the notice that school was out early. And so I sat on the porch at minus 30 at noon. And I didn't know anything about it. The door was locked, the house was sealed, and I sat there. And I started crying. I checked every door, and I didn't know I had no strategy or plan. I was just a kid. I didn't know anything. And I cried. My tears froze to my face. And the hours went by, and a neighbor who worked for SaskTel with the truck with the cool lift thing, kind of drove off to work, and then an hour or whatever later, drove back and saw this little boy still sitting on his front porch. And he stopped, and he comes over, and he's like, are you okay? And I said, no, I'm not. I can't get in my house. And I was frozen, popsicle level frozen. And one rule I did know is you don't get in the car with strangers. Stranger danger was a pretty major thing. But I was like, okay, stranger danger or frozen popsicle, I have to choose. And he did have a lift thing bucket on his truck, which made him as close to a police officer as I could see anywhere. So I was like, okay, I can risk this. So I crawled in and he took me to my aunt's house, who lived in another part of town. I knew how to get there. And my aunt fed me hot cocoa and was able to contact mom, and everything worked out. Mom cried for years over that. Every time, this is the trick, anytime I got in trouble, I'd be like, there was that time on the front porch, and Mom be like, oh, I milked that for a while until I was about 20, and she's like, that doesn't work anymore. So, but I got lots of years out of that one. But here's the thing where Mom was sad about that. What that did inside of me was profound. I learned that my neighbors were people that weren't stranger danger. And in fact, stranger danger is something that scientists have found. It's like getting struck by lightning that a neighbor would hurt another neighbor, actually. The vast majority of stories and statistics and police reports show that that neighbors actually are very interested in caring for each other. And many neighbors can be very trusted. Now, there is always a risk. Welcome to life. But you're more at risk from a family member of being hurt, of a child being hurt from a family member, than they are from a neighbor. Yeah. Neighbors are very interested in helping each other. And this is not the narrative that our culture offers to us. So at that point, I knew that the man in the truck, who only after that ever waved, that man in the truck saved my life. And I forever was like, he helped me when nobody else could. It changed me. That's a pivotal story. And I believe Jesus sat with me on the porch, sat with that Saskatell man, and sat with me in the truck and took me to my aunt's and helped me warm up with the hot cocoa there. That's a story from my neighborhood where I realized Jesus was with me the entire time and I could trust him. And I love telling that story now. And the more I think about it, the more I think of all the stories that are on my street, all the things that we got in trouble with, the hole to China we tried digging in our backyard. You know, all that stuff happens in a neighborhood. And Jesus is present in that. God's Spirit is present in that. When we begin to see our neighborhood through some of these lenses, even our childhood neighborhood, sometimes it's important to do it. I used to do this task where I talk about this. I talk about your current neighborhood. Do you know how hard it is to draw your own neighborhood now? It does not have the stories. It does not quite have the fun. It's pretty stale. You might have some names, but you don't have the hole to China. You don't have those things on your current neighborhood, but you could. By doing it through the child eyes, I think we are reimagining how maybe we could begin to have some fun in our neighborhood again, how we can meet Jesus in our neighborhood again, how we can cry and have problems in our neighborhood again, have our car broken down in our neighborhood again. That can happen, and it's not bad. We try to have a pretty sterile existence now, sometimes just out of sheer necessity. We just don't have time for the fun of it all. But I hope what you realize is that by introducing your neighborhood to your neighbor, that you're like, places are special. Places are uniquely special. Did you know none of you have the same piece of paper here today? You don't. God was particularly interested in you experiencing your neighborhood in that place and time. You did not levitate over your neighborhood. You kids get their fingers dirty, right? I think God is so excited about that. I think God still has childlike eyes for your place. And I think he sees you in it as the character of your place. A good friend of mine taught me about being a character in your place. Have you ever watched like Seinfeld and Kramer comes through or Steve Urkel comes in? These are characters in the story. And guess what happens? There's a big applause when those people come through the door because they're a character, right? You want to hear what they say. And so this friend of mine, he said, I think the goal is that we're to be characters in the neighborhood. We're to be larger than life and we're to be abundantly ourselves. If you're a total introvert, you be an introvert character in the neighborhood who's very interested in one person at a time. Enjoy that. That's your character. Do that well. If you're the life of the party, be that character. Say, can we have a party a weekend around here? Because I love me a good party. Whatever your character is, be that. I was sitting at a table in a coffee shop and sitting with a very famous local resident, well-known local resident. And these three kids come up to beside our table. So I kind of like lean back expecting they're going to talk to this very famous local resident. And they turn to me. They're like, you're the bee man. We want you to meet our parents over there because you're the bee man. I am the bee man now. I speak to all these kids and I'm famous in my neighborhood for being a bee man. Not a pastor, the guy who likes bees. And you know what? I don't correct them. I don't try to change it. I'm like, well, I'm going to be the best darn bee man this place has ever seen. I ask them if they've planted flowers this year. We ask them about their garden, and their parents are like, oh, man, our kids are all crazy about bees. I'm like, I'm a character in their story. You know, they will one day draw this circle, and they'll be like, and there was this bee guy. I don't know whatever became of him, but dang, he made me feel special. He loved me. He told me that I was able to do more than I thought I could, and he changed my perception on things. We root stuff inside of each other, and we don't realize we have the power to do exactly that. So if you turn the page on this, you can do this exact same exercise. I would encourage you to do this as a spiritual discipline. to do this as a neighborhood encounter reflection, I call it. I kind of made this up as a kind of playing off some Ignatian spirituality about review of prayer. But really, what you do is you take some time and draw your neighborhood, and then you try to place a moment in time on that. So maybe you backed the car out and crunched into a fence post or did something crazy, or maybe you had a neighbor wave and say hi. This is just a spiritual reflection process for you to be able to kind of go through and go, hey, what happened there? Was God involved in that moment? What is God maybe saying to me in that moment? I think sometimes we do all of our spiritual reflection at retreat centers or on mountaintops, and to kind of place our prayer life in a very local place, in the humdrum of our local place, is, I think, a very good experience. So that's a little tool you can hold for yourself there. Hey, I want you, if you would, pull out your pencil or pen again, and we're going to fill out this next one, Neighborhood Imagination Reflection. There's a bunch of statements here, and I'm going to read through. You don't have to show this to a single soul. This is you. I want you to be honest with this, okay? Honest with yourself. I'm not seeing it. No one else is seeing it. But there's these statements, and they're kind of agree-disagree statements. And if you agree, you can either circle agree or disagree, or I decide to put boxes on there too, so if you want to check it off to say, yep, I'm doing that, or put maybe a little X if you're not, but however you want to mark it down. The goal of this isn't to try to judge. The goal of this isn't to try to say if you're rocking this or not. If I fill this out, I am kind of the neighborhood guy, and I'm not very good at filling this out. So don't worry if your answers are high or low. We're just trying to kind of get to the heart of some important questions. So I'm going to read them out, and we'll do this. Number one, I see hope on the horizon of my neighborhood. Agree or disagree? Number two, strangers are welcome in the future I see for my neighborhood. This is where imagination kicks in. Do you see your strangers in the future of your neighborhood? When you perceive it, is it just for the people you know, or are there some new people in the way you perceive it? Number three, beauty in my neighborhood is something I create with others, not just something I observe from afar. Do you create beauty in your neighborhood? Do you have evidence of that in your life right now? Number four, I have recently noticed something new and surprising in my neighborhood. Yes or no? Number five, I can think of 10 people in my neighborhood who know me and who I know too. Agree or disagree? Knowing is a mutuality. I know you and you know me. Number six, there are people in my neighborhood who once frightened me or seem odd, but today we're closer and there's peace between us. There's a guy who lives across the back alley from me. His name's Dave. He drives a Harley motorcycle and dresses the part. And when he first came, he pulled up and he's in his garage. We kind of have an alley. And I said to my wife, I was like, this is when we just moved in and he moved in. And I was like, hun, there's pretty much a gangster living right across the alley. I don't want to meet him. He's scary. His motorcycle's scary. I'm going to go talk to him. If I die, you know I've died following Jesus into the neighborhood. So here I go. This might be the martyrdom of Preston Puto. We should probably record this or something, you know. Turns out Dave is just a great dear neighbor now, and all of his biker friends come around, and he's just a fantastic guy, and I've turned to him for help on a lot of different occasions. So he's somebody that I thought there would be no peace between us, and he turned out to be just a real teddy bear. If Dave ever listens to this, he will be very insulted that I called him a teddy bear. So, next one. I know others who share the dream of making our neighborhood beautiful. I know others who share the dream of making our neighborhood beautiful. Number eight, I know I'm loved, I feel loved, and it's my guiding narrative. I know I'm loved, I feel loved, and it's my guiding narrative. Number nine, I can be me. I like being me in a crowd. I fit best when I'm just myself. Do you like being you? Do you feel that? Agree or disagree? Or do you feel like you need to be somebody else to fit in? Sometimes as a pastor, people want me or feel like people don't know how to act around a pastor. When they hear I'm a pastor, they're kind of like, I was one of our first block parties, a neighbor down the way, the party started, and he goes, he's this guy who fought in Bosnia, and he's like 9'9", like he's just so big, and his hands were like saucer, he's a big, big guy. He's going around, and this is what he's saying. Preston over there, he's a reverend. Pastor's a reverend. No, yeah, Preston's a reverend. It's a reverend. I was like, oh, great. He's going around, and for some reason, he got it in his head that he needs to tell everybody I'm a pastor. And I'm going, oh, okay, well, we'll see how this goes. We end up sitting beside each other, and he's very hard. He says, so, you're a pastor, eh, or a reverend? And I was like, yeah. He's like, I don't believe in any of that stuff. I go, okay. He goes, what do you do at your church? And I go, oh, we sacrifice cats. He goes, you're funny. And I was like, well, I think so. One thing led to another. By the end of the party, he's going around and saying, it's the best reverend I've ever met. I never met a reverend as good as this reverend. This is a good reverend. We got ourselves a good reverend here. Then by the end, he comes to me. He says, Preston, can I pull you aside? He says, we've never been married. We have a few kids, and we've always wanted to be, but we never thought that we'd ever do it. And we were just talking and say, do you think you could come over and marry us? And I said, you bet. We built a relationship. And then their friends beside them said the same thing after they came to that living room wedding, and we had another wedding in the mountains with them. And then their neighbors across the back alley wanted to get married. And I was like, I just felt like going through the neighborhood with a gong and saying, bring out the unwed, bring out the unwed, you know? Bring them all out. Let's get them all fixed up here, right? Amazing. The way we love, the way I was myself, I got to be Preston, a character in the neighborhood who's fully Preston. I don't pretend to be anything more or less than I am. I am Preston, telling jokes about sacrificing cats that turn into a moment where a guy who is as skeptical as anybody about if I'm the real deal or not suddenly lets me into his life. When we had this major flood, our whole place was just filling up. It was filling up. We had 200-year floods over on a Sunday and then on a Tuesday. It was the worst. Just damaged our community so bad. Who comes down but this guy? He's running through the floodwaters, which is up to our waist, and like a hero. Like, he's big, huge. I hear he comes to this sewer grate and rips off this sewer grate. Everything was slow motion when he was doing it. Ah! And it was able to let the water go down this drain, which had been all plugged up from construction. And he saved the day. He had no reason to come to my neighborhood. He was down from a block over when we had this party. But he knew me. I liked that reverend. It was enough to bring him running down and saving the day. It all happened because I was myself. Number 10, trust is pervasive within 90 paces of my home. Agree or disagree? Is trust the word on the street between you and your neighbors? I feel safe in my neighborhood. Agree or disagree? Number 12, in the past month, I've had people in my home and around my table besides my family. Has that happened? Sure. Have you had neighbors in your home and around your table besides your family? Number 13, I have energy after my day of work to be with others. Do you have energy? Yeah, maybe, sometimes. Number 14, my neighborhood is lush and growing. There's more than enough and abundance of goodness to share. Or is there a sense of scarcity in your neighborhood that there's never enough? I am, number 15, I am interdependent on people around me, not independent. There's a difference between independence and interdependence. Are you interdependent? Do you rely on them for things? One of our neighbor girls, she was locked out of her house. And we didn't realize this, but her mom said, if you're ever locked out, go down to Preston and Kelly's house. And she shows up, and my mother-in-law was there, and she's like, oh, what are you doing here? And she goes, I was locked out, and I was always told to come over here. And she did. She came in, and everything was fine, and an hour later, her grandpa came, and everything worked out. There's an interdependence. Sometimes we as church people, we think that we are the ones to provide for other people. We are the givers of hospitality. Did you know the most hospitable thing you can do is to receive hospitality? It is. I had a neighbor down the street from me, and he always had his garage open all the time in the summer. And he'd sit there with a lawn chair for him and an empty lawn chair beside him in his garage, just looking at the world, and a big cooler of beer. And he was right out in front of our, mailboxes. I knew that if I was going to my mailbox, it would be an hour. You know why? Because this neighbor would say, hey, Preston. So if I was going to the neighborhood mailbox, if I didn't have time, I wouldn't go, because he'd be like, or I'd say, hun, I'm going. Don't know how long I'll be. I'll try to limit it to a drink. We'll see how things go, you know? And there I am, sitting with my neighbor. And we spent so much time there. And then other neighbors. We'd sometimes have up to a dozen people sitting there. Because I received hospitality in whatever the form of hospitality is. I think this is why Paul is so big on saying, eat what's put in front of you. Because that's the way you love your neighbor. Whatever they give you, eat it up. Don't worry, I've covered it all. So I've been invited into... I've eaten food from every ethnicity you could possibly think of. Meats, I don't really know what they are called or where they come from, but I've been... Food is left on hooks on our door. We have left food on our back door. We have fresh baked... We now have a guy in the neighborhood brings us bread once a week. There is so much food coming and going from my house, and I receive. That is what hospitality is. I think the church needs to be the receivers of hospitality as much as it's a giver. Okay. Where are we? 16. I could describe in a metaphor the ways that God is at work in my neighborhood. I see a story emerging here. I use this metaphor of bees, but I think sometimes if you love a place long enough, you have a way of talking about it that you can only describe in a metaphor. Mom, my neighborhood's kind of like this. If your neighborhood is a row of houses, maybe we need to develop a richer story. Number 17, I hang out in my neighborhood and let myself daydream. My place inspires me to wonder. Do you ever daydream in your neighborhood and walk around and go, what could this place be? What could be happening here? Number 18, being bored and taking lazy days is okay with me. Do you Sabbath? Or do people see Christians as the busy people who are always running, always off to a different thing? Never have time. I think the most godly witness that the people of God can have is a lawn chair. An evidence of hard work on some days and good old lazy days on other days. I think lazy days are the days that God made to... Abraham Heschel says, Sabbaths are a cathedral in time. What would it be like to make a cathedral in time in your place, a holy place? That on your days off, it's holy, and people want to be with you. People want to hang out with you, because on your days off, these are good days. They know that if they come over, they can just kick their feet up and enjoy you. Number 19, my faith makes more sense to me because of my neighborhood. Have you come to know God more because you live where you live? Does faith make sense to you? Does theology make sense to you? Does the Bible make sense to you because of the place that you live? It took me, actually, I've studied in Israel several times. I'm going back there in June. And I study there because I love biblical geography. It took me, I didn't realize the Bible was in a rooted place in time. I thought it was a little bit like Wizard of Oz. God in this great story happened somewhere away. And now I believe something about God, and I carry that belief in my heart. When I went there, it was dusty. People have B.O., it is windy, it is dry, it is lush, it has people, they're speaking different languages, they eat different foods, and I was like, oh, this is real, this is a real place. And I had to discover this in order for me to come back to my place and go, oh, my place informs my faith. The people around me are part of my faith. I don't live floating an inch off the ground. I'm rooted in it. And that doesn't make my faith less. It, in fact, enhances it and does much more. Number 20, I can find the fruit of the Spirit in my community. Are there trees of God's Spirit hanging in your community with love, joy, peace, patience, kindness? Is it a little shriveled berry that you, or is it something lush? Are there seasons in the life of your community where you can, oh, we are entering into a joy season. Oh, there's goodness. That's right around the corner. Do you know how to pollinate the fruit that's in your, that's growing? These are some of the big questions that I've just been putting together over time, but I hope that it helps you in your own imagination do some reflection on some of these big, big questions. Hey, we're going to keep on moving here, and I'm going to read on the next page. There's this awesome thing about by Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. I never say it right, but there it is. And it says this: above all, trust in the slow work of God. We are quite naturally impatient in everything to reach the end without delay. But we should like to skip the intermediate stages. We are impatient of being on the way to something unknown, something new. And yet it is the law of all progress that it is made by passing through some stages of instability, and that it may take a very long time. And so I think it is with you. Your ideas mature gradually. Let them grow. Let them shape themselves without undue haste. Don't try to force them, as though you could be today what time, that is to say, grace and circumstances acting on your own goodwill, will make of you tomorrow. Only God could say what this new spirit gradually forming within you will be. Give our Lord the benefit of believing that his hand is leading you, and accept the anxiety of feeling yourself in suspense and incomplete. These are whole holy words in my mind. I think they are so good. Friends, I think something is brewing inside of us. This work of loving our neighbor is a slow burn, a slow growth. God is rooting something. You were made to love your neighbors. So we don't need to force, but we do need this kind of patient trust that God is doing something inside of you. I love, accept the anxiety of feeling yourself in suspense and incomplete. Invariably, when I share these things, people come up with anxiety-filled questions. It's the main driver. It's sometimes packaged in other ways, like, but what about under these circumstances? Or what about this circumstance? Or have you considered this? What I'm learning is behind almost every one of those is a sense of anxiety that, can God resolve the challenge of loving my neighbor? Can God resolve this complexity between me and that person, or in my own soul, or my lack of time, or my busyness, or whatever the circumstances are? And I believe, increasingly I believe in this, accept the anxiety of feeling yourself in suspense and incomplete. Give our Lord the benefit of believing that his hand is leading you. Friends, I'm not here to solve all your questions about how you're going to love your neighbors. I believe his hand's leading us, though. This is scripture. This is the heart of the good news of Jesus. He knows how to connect us with our neighbors and help us love them well. And he has our anxiety in his hands. We can pause there for a second.